Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. A tremendous Wednesday to you. Good show. Program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. What's cracking? Welcome to the show. It is the epitome of a front load. Lots to get done today. Three interviews and all in the first half of the program. So let me set it all up for you. Your phone number, as you know, is toll free. It never changes. It's always right there. Take advantage of it. 1-800-636-8686. Now, in terms of the front load, I've got Wisconsin Badgers star running back, a Heisman Trophy candidate, Jonathan Taylor, and he's coming up in about 15 minutes. After that, the head football coach at Appalachian State, Eli Drinkwitz, in hour number two. And we talked a lot about the undefeated teams. You've got the Bills, a surprise 3-0. You've got the Pats, not a surprise at 3-0. And look at the 49ers right there, too. Linebacker Fred Warner joins us in hour number two. So three interviews in the front half of the program. In and around that, I've got some rants and takes, thoughts. I'm looking for you to get through. 1-800-636-8686. We're talking Wisconsin football next segment. Also, you can find me on Twitter at Jim Rome, and you can email me directly at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. Jonathan Taylor, Eli Drinkwitz, Fred Warner, Barry Zito. On the Jim Rome Podcast, episode 97. Man, I'm pushing content. Grinding content. It's a big, big Wednesday here. All right, so yesterday was a really weird day. A really weird day. And an even more bizarre night in Major League Baseball. I'm starting with some baseball. Let me lay this out, too. You had the Nationals capping off an amazing turnaround. They went from 19-31 at one point this season to wrapping up a postseason spot and officially putting Bryce Harper and the Phillies to sleep while playing Bryce Harper and the Phillies. I mean, how good must that have felt to the Nats? Almost as good as Max Scherzer, breaking out the special goggles with two different lenses to match his eyes during the celebration. I bet that felt pretty good. Pretty weird, but pretty good. It's got to feel great. But not as great as a shirtless and beer-soaked Brian Dozier twerking in the clubhouse good. I'm going to say there's nothing that feels as good as how Brian Dozier was feeling yesterday. In fact, I'm not sure anybody has celebrated a wild card as hard as the Nats celebrated theirs. Just be sure you go twice as hard in the event that you win that wild card game and run that thing back, but go even harder. So that was pretty amusing. You know, not weird, but amusing. Now, here's where things did get weird. The Yankees and the Rays combined to use 20 pitchers as Tampa Bay wins in 12 innings. The Cardinals and Diamondbacks combined for 24 pitchers and 48 strikeouts as St. Louis won in 19 innings. Arizona used 30 players. The game lasted 6 hours and 53 minutes. And you know what's even more weird? You know what's even weirder than that? 24 pitchers was not the most that were used in a game last night. The Giants and the Rockies combined to use a major league record 25 pitchers in a game the Colorado won 8-5 in 16. There were 8 home runs, 35 strikeouts, and a combined batting average of 180. Holy crap. Now that's weird. That's weird and terrible. And anybody who stayed to the end deserves a prize. Because 5.5 hours of guys striking out with the occasional bomb is not a good time. In fact, it's pretty much the worst time. That was so bad, that was almost impressive. That was so bad, I almost respect it. But not nearly as much as I respect this. Not nearly as impressive as this. Not nearly as impressive as one Jose Ramirez. No, correction. Jose Enrique Ramirez. Because after what he did for Cleveland last night, he's getting the full government right here. Now, he fractured his hamate bone on August 24th. That injury is no joke now, especially for a hitter. And especially when you see the pick of his hand after the surgery. Check this out if you're watching on CBS Sports Network. His palm had more stitches in it than a baseball. It looked like something out of a horror film. Or if you're watching on CBS Sports Network, don't check it out. Look for it online. That's an injury. I mean, it looks like a baseball. This dude's hand looks like a baseball with the stitching. That's an injury that takes a while to recover from, and even then, you've got to start a rehab assignment. Typically, it takes 5 to 7 weeks before you're back, if you're lucky, but this guy was back 1 month after. Before the game, he told reporters, quote, "I don't feel 100%, end quote. This dude's tough now. He's a warrior, and he was going to get out there and do whatever he could to help his team get a spot in that wild card spot or race. Again, keep in mind, when you have that kind of procedure on your hand, and if you see his hand, you know exactly what I'm speaking of, it can really jack with your swing. It can throw off everything you do at the plate. Guys say that they're still feeling the injury months after that surgery. So what happens? Ramirez comes up in the first. Base is loaded. Hitting left-handed. You could probably guess what happened next.
And the 3-1 offering. A swing and a drive to deep right field. Away, back and gone. How about that welcome back? A grand slam down the right field line. The little man with a big bat has come back to spark the Indians with a grand slam here in the first.
Indians radio, my man coming right out of his shoes. Come back from surgery on your hand. Get to the plate in your first at bat, late in September, in a pennant race, and absolutely crush a ball for a grand slam to get things started. I mean, that's unreal. That's like the stuff of movies. And it would be great if it ended right there. If that ends right there, that's one of the best stories of the year. But it didn't end right there because Ramirez comes back in the third inning, this time from the opposite side of the plate.
Now he bats right-handed, and he drives it to deep left. Are you kidding? Way out of here. Two-thirds of the way up the bleachers in left center. Jose Ramirez, two swings of the bat, seven RBIs.
Two at-bats, two bombs, one from each side of the plate, seven RBI. A grand slam and then a three-runner in the first three innings as the guy's coming back from surgery. And those were not cheap dongs either. Neither one of those was a wall scraper. Man, they were launched. Moonshots. They power Cleveland to an 11-0 beatdown over Chicago. My man, Terry Francona, who has seen everything, literally everything, was practically speechless after seeing what he saw last night.
So I take it that's just what you expect from Jose. That's unbelievable.
I mean, that is unbelievable. And completely ridiculous. And totally absurd. Once again, you come back 4 weeks to the day after your last game and you hit a grand slam in your first at bat. Then you chase that with a three-run bomb 2 innings later on the other side of the plate. Man, that is tough as hell. That is impressive as hell. The other games last night were weird, but that was just flat out awesome. How awesome? Awesome enough that I'm leading this show by talking regular season baseball in the middle of the NFL season. That awesome. If I'm leading with baseball in September, either something really weird or something totally incredible must have happened last night, and it did. Jose, Enrique, Ramirez, if you need him. We're 1 week out from the AL wildcard race, or I should say game, and something tells me there are teams you would rather run into instead of the Indians in this thing. Ramirez, Santana, Lindor, Puig at the plate. UCSB icon, Shane Bieber, Mike Clevenger heading up that rotation. The ultimate skip, Tito Francona calling the shots. That is not a team you want to run into in the postseason. Enjoy that. Man, I love this time of year. Love this time of year. Seamheads, get in here. It is your time. Cleveland, how y'all living? You got America's team. You got a strong ass Indians push going on. Life good, C-Town.
Are you kidding?
Life good, C-Town. I'm asking you, get in here. 1-800-636-8255. 8686. The only thing more bizarre than me leading the show this time of year with baseball is I have another monster block of baseball in the National League as well.
How about that? Welcome back.
Coming up a little bit later on, 1-800-636-8686. In the NFL, we could talk about the team that used to be America's team. Used to be. The Dallas Cowboys. If they look good. And they've got a showdown Sunday night in New Orleans. I love that game. But that's not necessarily what I want to talk about. I want to talk about how America's team is now America's weirdest team. And like always, weird generally is good. Not as it relates to the Cowboys. I'm not saying they won't make a run. I'm not saying they won't beat the Saints. I'm not saying that they won't make a deep run. I'm saying they're weird. And I'll tell you why that is later on. As long as we're going off the board, everybody's focused on the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball. The NBA is still doing work. Doing work, cracking down on tampering. And normally that's a reason to just shut down. If you hear me mention that, don't do it this time. They're really out of line. You know, I'll have that story for you. Maybe you've heard about the so-called 89-cent man. Have you heard about the 89-cent man? The 89-cent man who would be the $500,000 man.
89.
You think about gambling, you think about the stories, right? The stories that come along with gambling. Chad Millman did a really good job of laying that out on a podcast that people are into gambling more and more so, but what people are really into are the stories involved in gambling. How about a guy that put down 89 cents
89.
For a 20-game parlay, and if he hits, he makes a $500,000. You imagine turning 89 cents into 89. A $500,000 in less than a week's time. If you know this story, you know where I'm going. If not, wait till you hear this. 1-800-636-8686. Again, a huge day here in the jungle. Good morning, Adam Hawk.
Morning, Jay.
Really quickly, Jaime, I might have to take a pass on the playoffs this year for the first time ever. With the 20 pitching changes, late start times, and that stupid strike zone box on TV, I can't take it anymore. Hey, jerks. I've been around the block a time or two. I know what a strike looks like and a ball as well. Get that box off my damn TV. Steven S.A. Seamhead's got a point, yo. And finally, Jim, in honor of National One-Hit Wonder Day, can you please play my 2013 winning smack-off call, or as I like to call it, my Mambo number 5. Cornballingly yours, Mark in Hollywood. Warm me and Beaks, replacing those two kooks in those Sonic commercials. Brian and Charlotte. Good boy, Brian. When we come back, we're talking to the best back in the nation, Jonathan Taylor. Stay tuned. Pay-per-view presents a champion versus champion showdown when Errol the Truth Spence Jr. takes on Showtime Sean Porter in a world championship unification bout at Staples. It's Saturday night. Undefeated southpaw, Errol Spence Jr. has become one of boxing's top stars, making quick work of most of his opponents in his rise to becoming a world champion. Relentless in the ring, welterweight world champion, Sean Porter brings the heat with an intensely physical style. Do not miss Spence Jr. versus Porter, Saturday, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. Order right now on pay-per-view. It's also available on the Fox Sports app.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. All right, it's going to take me a minute to set this one up. Check this resume. Joined right now by a running back for Wisconsin, 2018 Doak Walker Award winner, Big Ten Running Back of the Year, a unanimous All-American, and All-Big Ten Academic All-American. 23 carries, 203 yards, 2 touchdowns in Saturday's win over number 11, Michigan. For the season, 58 carries, 440 yards, and 7 rushing touchdowns. He leads the nation with 10 TDs this season, more than 4,600 rushing yards in 2-plus seasons. Wisconsin's 3-0. They're number 8 in the AP poll, and they are hosting Northwestern Saturday. Running back Jonathan Taylor is my guest. Jonathan, it's great to have you on. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing pretty well today. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. Great to visit with you. So I know you're focused on Northwestern, but if you could, can you take me back to before the Michigan game? There was a lot of hype about Michigan and the build-up to that game. I'm curious, what was the mood and the mentality of you guys in the locker room before you ran out there?
We really wanted to just start off Big Ten play the right way. We wanted to start off fast and make sure that we got a jump in making sure that, you know, playing this type of competition, the Big Ten Conference is really tough, that we came out and played a really good game.
All right, so you scored on a one-yard run to cap off a 12-play drive that opened up that game. And then later in the first quarter, after the defense forced a punt, you had the ball on the 28-yard line. You rip off a 70-yard TD run. Can you take me through the play? What did you see?
One of the biggest things was pressing the blocks, making sure that I'm doing what I can and being patient in order for my linemen to have enough time to get to the next level so I can make that cut to the outside, drawing those defenders inside, allowing my guys to latch on to them, and then I'm able to make that cut outside.
We're talking to Jonathan Taylor, a Wisconsin running back. Now, you've been a part of some really big wins in your time at Wisconsin, but where does that one rank in terms of facing a ranked team, knowing how badly they wanted to beat you guys and make a statement, and still you dominate that game and at one point had a 35-0 lead? So where do you rank that win?
I rank that win pretty high, especially just because the fans were so electric. It's always electric when you're playing Camp Randall, but it was just a different feel for that game. The fans were roaring the entire game.
Jonathan Taylor is my guest. You know, when I mentioned sending a statement, linebacker Zach Bond said after the game, quote, "After the first two games, I feel like the world didn't want to say that we were the best defense in the country. They said we didn't have the best running back in the country, and we didn't have the best O-line in the country, and we really made an effort to make a statement this game," end quote. So do you feel like you guys proved that you do have the best defense, you do have the best offensive line, and that you are the best running back in the country?
I feel like it's a great start. One of the biggest things to call yourself the best is to be able to be consistent. So for us to do that throughout the entire season, that's our goal. That's one of the biggest things. We played really well, offense, defense, special teams through these first three games. But the biggest thing is that we want to be able to play well throughout the entirety of the season.
You know, very clearly, you're taking this all in stride and your humility comes through. But after the game, Jonathan, you were getting love on Twitter from the likes of Saquon Barkley, also Wisconsin legends like J.J. Watt and Melvin Gordon. Earlier in the season, Patrick Mahomes was hyping you. What's it like to get that kind of respect from guys of that magnitude?
It's an honor. It's an honor to have those guys mention you. Those guys, they played very well. They were tremendous players at the collegiate level, and then they went to the next level in the NFL and made a statement and became a top player in the NFL. So to have those guys mention you, it's a complete honor, and it just pushes you, and it's more motivation to keep going.
Yeah, how about when you play that position at that school? For instance, I mentioned Melvin Gordon. Last year I was there for the Rutgers game, and I saw Ron Dayne. When you're a running back at Wisconsin, you're going to go into that running back room, and you're going to see photos of all the greats who came before you. I'm curious, what's that like? I mean, is that inspiring, and do you feel like you've got a responsibility to carry on that tradition?
It really is a responsibility playing this position at this school. And one of the biggest things, it's like a fraternity. So the guys, once you meet them, they're always helping you out, the likes of Ron Dayne, Melvin Gordon. Anytime I met those guys, they always tell me to reach out if I have any questions. So it's really like a fraternity, and you have great mentors to look after you.
Wisconsin running back Jonathan Taylor is my guest, and you're also always quick to make sure that your offensive line gets love and respect. What's it like to run behind that group, and what makes that group so special?
I think one thing that makes that group so special is really how smart they are. I remember my freshman year when I first came in, and Coach Rudy, our offensive line coach and OC, he was asking the linemen if they saw the safety rotation. So that was the first time I ever heard a coach ask an offensive lineman if he was looking at the safety. So just knowing that Coach Rudy is coaching those guys up to be some of the smartest players on the field, that's when I really knew that this group was special.
Now, one of the things you've been working on, I know, in becoming a complete back means, well, actually a number of things, receiving, picking up the blitz. Who have you studied as you've worked on becoming a receiver, and what have you learned from those sessions?
One of the biggest things is I try to look at the guys who are doing really well. So I was fortunate enough to go to an awards, you know, my freshman year, and I was able to meet Saquon Barkley and those guys who were doing that in the third down realm really well, and asking those guys questions and picking their brains on how did they elevate their game in that way. So just being able to study guys who are in your same position who are excelling at that, and then being able to incorporate that in your game.
Listen, you're not going to make it about you, but you do lead the country in touchdowns. Your name is being mentioned for the Heisman Trophy. I know you're more about the team, but what's it like when you hear people talking about you as a Heisman candidate?
I mean, it's definitely an honor, especially when you look at the guys who are playing. I mean, you have guys who are playing outstanding right now. So to be mentioned amongst the best of the elite, I mean, it's truly an honor, and you use that as motivation in order to keep going and pushing, because, you know, at the end of the day, you really want to do the best you can to help your team win games, but that's just another incentive.
We're talking to Jonathan Taylor, Wisconsin running back. You know, if you and I were to go back, when you were growing up in Salem, New Jersey, the story goes that Wisconsin was interested, but his running backs coach John Settle said, quote, "We liked him, didn't love him, so to speak," end quote. One of the things he wanted to see was more breakaway speed, so you started to get more and more focused on your track workouts. How did you go about approaching that?
One of the biggest things is putting good football on tape. In high school, you know, you have a tendency, some players, to take plays off. You're usually one of the more talented guys and usually bigger than everyone else, so you would kind of take plays off, and then you quickly transition once you get to this level that every single play, you have to make sure you're giving it 100% because there's talent all across the board. So really in high school, that was the biggest thing, is making sure I was consistent, not taking plays off, giving 100% effort every single play. Because like I said, once I matured my senior year and really understood at the next level, you're going to have to give it 100% every single play.
All right, so you did. Your senior year, you did mature, and you start to break off enormous runs, and then they offer you a scholarship. What was that moment like?
I was kind of honored at the moment just because of the prestige of this school and at this position for them to want to offer me a scholarship, to think, hey, this guy may have something and we think that he could be something here. You know, he could play a role here. It was really an honor. So it kind of elevated me to another level as far as my work ethic, just knowing that these guys, they have a trained eye. They know that when they see something, they usually have a good edge on it. I mean, they saw Melvin Gordon, they saw Monty Ball and all those guys. So just understanding that I had to continue to work.
All right, so to me this sounds like you're really, really mindful, and you are, because you do a lot of work in terms of mindfulness, breathing, yoga. How did you first get into all of that, and how much does that help on the field?
Really, to get into yoga, Danny Davis took me along to a session and this past summer. The mindfulness was brought to us towards the end of my freshman year with our strength and conditioning staff, and I feel like those two things really come hand in hand, especially the yoga as far as explosive movement, being able to bend my hips and get in and out of cuts, and then the mindfulness as far as being able to relax, understand that, you know, all you're thinking is before the play. You don't want to think once the ball snaps. You want to go out there and cut it loose. So just being able to focus up before the play, control my breathing, and then go out there and have fun.
Jonathan Taylor is my guest. One last thought. So, Jonathan, our son enrolled at Wisconsin a few weeks back. He's a freshman. You've been there a couple of years now. What kind of things should my son be looking forward to as a Badger?
He should definitely be looking forward to Mifflin. He should be looking forward to Sunroom Cafe, getting the French toast with strawberries and bananas. Old Fashioned, that's another great restaurant for brunch and lunch. Those are three things I think he should definitely be looking forward to. And the snowball fight on the Battle of Bascom. When it starts snowing out, they usually do that.
My man, I love it. I love the intel. I appreciate the intel. I will be there on Parents' Day. Jonathan Taylor, my guest. Jonathan, really nice to have you on the show. I know you got an impacted schedule. Thanks for making time for us, and really good to get caught up. Appreciate that so much.
Thank you for having me on.
Jonathan, be good. Take care. Well done. And lives up to all the advanced hype, right? Unbelievable player on the field. Tremendous young man off the field. Heisman Trophy candidate. Wisconsin 3-0. Number 8 in the AP poll. And they're at home against Northwestern on Saturday, noon Eastern. And they look good. They look really good. They look playoff good. Great balance. You know they can run it. They can also throw it. Great offensive line. Great defense. And they put a beating on Michigan. Badger Nation, what's up? Take your thoughts. 1-800-636-8686. All right, I mentioned we were going to front load. So we're going back to back. When we come back, we're talking Appalachian State football. Head coach Eli Drinkwitz joins me next. Fred Warner coming up next hour. Better sleep can benefit basically anybody at all. This is why Casper created Sleptember. You heard me right? Sleptember. An entire month dedicated to rest and relaxation, from outrageously comfortable award-winning mattresses to pillows, sheets, and duvets. Casper is transforming the way we all sleep. The Casper mattress is an award-winning balance of comfort and support. Four layers of premium foam are designed to provide pressure relief for all-night comfort. Zoned support is designed to provide extra support to keep your back aligned. And with bedding, bed frames, and even a dog bed, Casper's got everything you need to build the bed of your dreams. And rest easy with free shipping and free returns. Get a Casper like I did. Try yours for 100 nights risk-free. Go to Casper.com. Use the code Rome. Get $100 off towards the purchase of select mattresses. Casper.com. Code Rome. Get $100 off towards the purchase of select mattresses. Terms and conditions apply. See Casper.com/terms. Here is your bottom of the hour sports update. Here is Andrew Bogish.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. Our thanks to Wisconsin running back Jonathan Taylor. As I mentioned, we are front-loading, and we're front-loading with college football today. If you're on hold, stay there. And again, I've got one phone line open nationwide and in Canada. It is toll-free. We're joined right now by the head football coach at Appalachian State. First season with the Mountaineers. He was named head coach on December 13th, 2018. He spent the last three seasons as offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach at NC State. App State beat North Carolina 34-31 Saturday. They're now 3-0 on the year, and they host Coastal Carolina Saturday. We are joined by Eli Drinkwitz. Eli, nice to have you on. How are you?
Man, great. That introduction, that song got me fired up, man. It's, to be on your radio show is a huge honor.
Eli, I appreciate you saying that.
I appreciate you having me on.
It's really not all that. Believe me when I tell you that, but it's great to have you on. I think you got a great story, and I'm anxious to talk to you. So you're coming off that win over North Carolina in their place on Saturday. You guys block a game-tying field goal on the last play. What kind of emotions were you feeling on that last play?
Man, just excitement and nervousness. You know, App State, since we've joined Division I, has been very close before. You know, they've been very close to Tennessee, very close at Wake Forest, very close with Penn State, but hadn't been able to get over that hump. And, you know, to have it so close and then have the opportunity to tie it up, well, I was just hoping we had enough left in the tank to finish the job. And when Akeem Davis, with just a little bit of extra effort and energy, put his hand up and blocked it, man, it was an exciting thing for not just me, but for the entire alumni base and fans. Just to have that investment, you know, they've invested energy, time, money, and to have it come to fruition, man, it was a special moment for sure.
Eli Drinkwitz joining us. We're talking App State football. I loved your reaction, though, afterwards, that as big a win as that was, you were very clear that that was not an upset. That was about setting the expectation. So what was the message to your players before the game to make sure that they knew that they belonged on that field and that they were going to win?
Well, I just knew going into the game, when you're a team going in to play North Carolina, a lot of people want to treat it as an underdog story, and we got to play above our heads. I thought we had a good football team, and I knew we weren't playing the logo. We weren't playing the millions of dollars of facilities. We were playing 11 people on the field, and I thought our 11 were pretty good. And so what I didn't want our guys to do was press, and I didn't want them to try to put on a Superman cape. I just needed them to do their job and play to the best of their ability. And so what I told them is, hey, let's just set the expectation of being 1-0, and it's hope versus expect. If we expect to win, if we expect to play well, then we'll be determined to accomplish that. If we hope it, then we're hoping that somebody else screws up, and let's not hope on somebody else. Let's expect to win. And that was the message for the entire week, and hammered that home on Saturday night or Friday night. And then Saturday I just told them, hey, we got to keep swinging. No matter what happens, we got to keep swinging and stay in the fight. And in the fourth quarter, we'll win. And that's what happened.
Yeah, I think that's also really interesting the way you lay out that difference between hope and expectation. Also, the thing was, you mentioned you didn't want your guys to press, but when the game started, you kick off, they return at 75 yards, then they score on the next play. It would have been very easy for guys to maybe take a step back, maybe even crumble in the face of that. But your offense came right back. They got points on the next drive. How important a statement was that?
Well, I think it was huge. You know, I knew when they scored, our guys would be a little bit nervous. But I'd been in those games before where the game speed and just all the emotion of it, you just aren't quite right there at kick. And so after that first touchdown, I just felt like if the offense would settle down, and I thought we had some pretty good openers that would keep them off balance. And when we went right back down and kicked that field goal, I knew we would settle in. Defense went out there, went three and out. We scored again, then defense forced a turnover. And at that point, we had all the momentum and just kept capitalizing on it.
App State football coach Eli Drinkwitz is my guest. You mentioned the defense. Defensive end Demetrius Taylor had a huge game, 2.5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, a 20-yard fumble return for a TD, and a 19-yard pick set up another TD. So what did you make of the way he showed up on the big stage?
I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a defensive performance as dominant as the way he played. I mean, they got to be seeing him in their nightmares right now. The only thing I can compare it to is in 2010, Nick Fairley against Alabama knocked out McElroy, had a strict sack fumble, and he was a dominant player in that game. But Demetrius, to have, you know, the sack fumble return for a touchdown and the interception return. The other thing he did, not many people see this, but in the second quarter, they drove 15 play drive, and there was a guy wide open in the end zone, and he tips the pass down at the line of scrimmage that would have been an easy touchdown. Instead, they end up kicking a field goal there. That's a 4-point swing. We end up winning the game by 3. So he impacted the game in a bunch of different ways. And he's a young man who last year just played about 15, 20 plays a game, and now he's really coming into his own. And we're excited about his growth. But like I told him, let's not be Milli Vanilli. Let's not be a one-hit wonder. Let's continue to be better each game. And this game calls for him to be a different type of player. And so that's what we're trying to be now.
Let's not be Milli Vanilli. We're talking Appalachian State football. Eli Drinkwitz, my guest. Yesterday was Toughness Tuesday. Take me through that. What is involved in Toughness Tuesday?
Well, Tuesdays are the most important day of the week because you gotta get your weights, you gotta get your class schedule, you gotta install all the different stuff, and you gotta hit, be physical. And so it's just Toughness Tuesday. It's what it is. There's no way around it. You can't talk yourself through it. You can't walk through it. You gotta go out there and be tough. And that's the thing about toughness. The only way to get tougher is to put yourself in tough situations and overcome it. And so we call it Toughness Tuesday. You gotta be up at 6, you gotta get to the weight room. You got to go to class in the morning. You got to be here at 1:30 for your meetings, and you got to go out and dominate a 22-period practice. And for us to do that the way we need to do that, you got to be tough. And so we just call it what it is. And, again, it's about setting the expectation and meeting the expectation. And so, hey, it's Toughness Tuesday, and let's set the expectation. Let's go meet it.
I like it. So when you look at it as a head coach, how much of success in that game is about physical toughness, and how much of it is about mental toughness?
I think they're right there both. They're one and the same. I mean, mental toughness is also having the ability to put your body in those physical toughness situations. I mean, we were cramping up in the third and fourth quarter, and, you know, our young guys had to go in and be mentally tough and not let the stage be too big for them. But then our older guys had to come back and say, hey, I'm pushing through this, and I'm going to keep fighting, and I'm going to keep playing. And, I mean, Akeem Davis played all but 3 plays in the game. And block the kick on the final kick, you know, that's 88 plays. So that's both mental and physical toughness. And to me, in the game of football, that's the number one characteristic of a great football player is his toughness, both physical and mental toughness.
Eli Drinkwitz joining me for a few more moments. You know, if you go back to that notion of expectations, when you were in school at Arkansas Tech, the plan was for you to become a lawyer. So what was your relationship with football like at that point? And then what made you change from a future as a lawyer to the future as a head football coach?
Well, you know, I was an undersized player in what wasn't good enough to play college football. I mean, I'm just going to call it like it is. And so my relationship was that my high school coach thought I'd be a good coach. And at that point, I was a little bit mad at the game. And so I said, no, I'm going to go to college and be a lawyer. And then I started doing intramural football, and I started loving it again, and got back into, you know, at that point, I was like, I'm going to be a high school football coach, and got the head seventh grade job in 2005. And the minds of men plan the ways, but the Lord directs their steps, and went on to coach high school in Springdale, and Coach Gus Malzahn gave me an opportunity to go to Auburn as a QC in 2010, and that really started my career. But, you know, whenever I decided to coach football, my mindset was I was going to go be a high school football coach, and I kind of had a 5-year plan. I was going to be a junior high coach, and then a high school coach, and then a coordinator, and then a head coach, and the Lord just worked it out for me to be coaching college football, and it's been a wild ride, but so far, so good.
Amazing. Let me ask you about one more thing about that process, because you get the opportunity to join the staff at Auburn, and then you go to Arkansas State, and when you're there, you're working with my guy, Brian Harsin. The story goes that at one point, he asked you, what were your goals? You kind of touched on that briefly, but what was your response to him when he posed that question to you?
You know, he asked me, it was right after he had hired me, and he said, what are your goals? And I kind of was just kind of stunned, because it was always just to be a head high school coach, and I didn't really have it. And he challenged me, just, hey, write your goals down and go get them. And at that point, I decided, you know, I'm in college football, and I belong here, and I can coach at this level. And so then I wrote down my goals of wanting to be a coordinator and a head football coach. And I'm very much indebted to Brian for, one, him giving me a chance at Arkansas State, two, giving me a chance at Boise State, and three, just encouraging me to grow as a person, not only as a football coach, because he helped me do that tremendously, but also as a person. And Brian was a big impact in my life and in my career.
All right, so let me finally ask you this, because I'm getting a kick out of talking App State football here. It would seem like you're running ahead of schedule in terms of being a head coach as young as you are, but it's also clear that you've got a really strong vision as to how you want this program to run and how you want your players to play. So what do you want people to think when they think of App State football?
Well, it's really for us pride, passion, and purpose. We want them to see, when they see us play, we want them to see us play with passion, with extreme effort and toughness, with a purpose that we're playing for each other and for this university, and with a pride of personal responsibility and daily excellence. And so, you know, when they see those three, when they see us play, we want to see those three characteristics come about. And it's one of those deals where we're always competing to be better than it's ever been done before. The thing about App State is it's been great for a long time. And the challenge for me was, how do we take it to the next level? And what are the things that we can do? What is the vision that I can sell to these guys to make them keep fighting, keep investing? And for me, it was just to always compete to do it better than it's been done before. You know, they've been so close to beating a Power 5 program that they hadn't done it. And for us to do it Saturday gave us credence and credibility to the message that we've been preaching, which is you got to play every single day with passion. You got to have a purpose for your life, not just in football, but also in life. And you got to have a personal responsibility and daily excellence in order to achieve it. You know, passion without a purpose is a nightmare. But if you don't have a pride, a personal responsibility, everybody has dreams like, oh, I'm gonna have a purpose out there. But you have to do something every single day to accomplish that. And in order to do that, in my opinion, you have to be a competitor. You have to always compete. And we got to be better today than we were yesterday. We got to be better tomorrow than we were today. And our goal is to be better Saturday than we were last Saturday. And if we don't do that, we're going to come up short. And so that's kind of our vision for the program, and that's what we're selling these kids. And the thing is, this team's bought into that. You know, it's one thing to sell it. It's another team for guys to buy it. And these guys have bought it, and we got a heck of a challenge in front of us this Saturday, and we're excited to take it on. I know that.
And you can see why App State is out quickly, 3-0. They're coming off a win over North Carolina, 34-31, but don't call that an upset. Next challenge is against Coastal Carolina, Saturday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern. The head football coach at App State is Eli Drinkwitz. Eli, that was a blast. Great to have you on the show. Thank you very much. Let's make sure we do that again soon.
Yeah, don't be a stranger. Call me back.
You know it. You got it, coach. I'll do that. I'll take you up on that. I enjoyed that. All right, we're talking App State football in hour number one. Jonathan Taylor, Eli Drinkwitz, there's your first hour. A lot of college football and some baseball at the very top. That is a good, good first hour here in the jungle. When we return, I will set up hour number two like this. I've got an open phone segment. So if you want to respond to anything you heard in the first hour, do it. If you want to go off the board with something else, do that. In fact, I really don't care what you talk about. Just make sure you come strong. Give me a good, strong take. Get this thing going. 1-800-636-8686. Even though I led with baseball, which is really unusual this time of year, I've got another monster MLB block that I want to get to. I want to talk about America's weirdest team in the NFL, the Dallas Cowboys. I can back that up. I'll tell you why I said that. Above and beyond that, have you heard the story about the 89-cent man? The 89-cent man who might be a $500,000 man. That's still ahead. 1-800-636-8686. Get in here. Get on the phones. Hit me up, and we'll come right back.